Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Happy Thanksgiving, Fenway Rundown listeners. We're going to try something a little different this week, as we sometimes do on the show, but this is going to be super different. I'm home for the holidays here in central Massachusetts, and that inspired me to have my dad, David Cotillo, by no means a podcast regular. This is definitely his first time. Accountant by day, podcast superstar over Thanksgiving break, as you're about to find out. But, you know, it's time to talk to family, catch up with family, and obviously that's what we're going to do on the show this week. So hope you enjoy it. We had some laughs, talked Red Sox, talked my baseball career, some other funny things from the past. So hope you enjoy it, and have a great Thanksgiving. So I am here at home, the house I grew up in, central Massachusetts. Last night, as I was talking to my parents over dinner about who would be a good podcast guest for this week, my mom said, "How about Dad?" And the first reaction was, "Well, no, that's funny." And then I thought, that's actually a great idea. So this is a big moment for the Fenway Rundown. You've heard Sam Kennedy. You've heard Alex Cora. You've heard, you know, some of the biggest names in baseball. And now we have one of the biggest names in local accounting, Dave Cotillo, joining the show for the first and potentially only time, though. You know, if you do well, we might make this an annual Thanksgiving tradition. How are you today, Dad?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, as a very loyal listener of the show, which I think is just part of your job requirements as my father, we appreciate all the support. I thought it'd be interesting to actually have you, as, you know, obviously kind of using the everyday fan things a little overdone, but just somebody who has been, you know, Red Sox fan for so long, somebody who's paid attention for so long, and obviously you have a great knowledge of the team, not just from having your son's tweet notifications on, but also, you know, knowing and watching the games and all that type of stuff. So, you know, this is going to be kind of like a Thanksgiving, you know, dinner table chat. As people sit down for Thanksgiving dinner and they talk baseball in this region right now, what's the topic? I mean, what is the storyline you think people are going to be, you know, sitting down and talking about? What is on the mind of the fan right now, and how's that playing out?
Well, I think the big question is whether the Red Sox are going to sign Xander and Devers and make them the cornerstone of the organization for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. I think the other issue that seems to be an issue every year is whether Sale is going to be healthy next year, and what the starting rotation is going to look like. I guess there's some talk of Whitlock staying in the starting rotation, which would weaken the bullpen. So, you know, starting pitching, bullpen, all those things are on the table as far as, you know, question marks and how they're going to fill in, you know, maybe Eovaldi leaving and that type of thing.
I mean, are those conversations happening? Like, from my point of view, I'm kind of inundated with it, right? Like, I just see the Red Sox stuff on Twitter all the time. It's kind of my whole existence, especially on Twitter, just seeing, you know, the what people are saying, how fans are reacting to things. But, you know, as a region, the Patriots are always interesting. They kind of run town. The Celtics and Bruins are off to such hot starts. Like, as someone who has seen this for a long time, do you feel like the Red Sox, as Dan Shaughnessy and others have written, do you feel like they've fallen behind?
I would definitely say yes. I would say, you know, back in the day, it was all Red Sox.
No, we have our first back in the day of the podcast. So,
I mean, it was all Red Sox, because there were so many people my age that were waiting for that championship to come. You know, it was the one thing that we needed to have fulfilled in our life before we went to the pearly gates.
Right.
So from that perspective, it was had more importance. And at the time, the Patriots kind of stunk, and the Bruins were always good, and the Celtics were always good. But I'd say now, given that 98.5 is the dominant sports radio station, they definitely don't focus on the Red Sox, because they don't carry the Red Sox. They focus mostly on the Pats, which, because they carry the Pats, the Celtics, and the Bruins, that's their main focus. But even with the Patriots, I think people are interested in that, thinking that it's the old Patriots, but it's really not. It's the Patriots without Tom Brady, and everyone's interested to see what's going to happen. So, other than Tony Maserati's show, during the baseball season, they really don't focus on the Red Sox.
I mean, there's a case to be made, and I think people have said this, that in the last couple of years, the Buccaneers have been more popular around here. You know, obviously the Red Sox with a big, you know, return to relevance in 2021. But I mean, what is it? I mean, as a, you know, and I think you obviously, you know, you're an educated fan, you know what's going on, you know, more probably the behind the scenes than other people do just because of me and telling you things. But like, what do they need to do to get back to kind of running town? Is it just a matter of winning? Is it a pace of play thing? I mean, how do the Red Sox kind of reclaim that crown? Is it as simple as, you know, go sign your homegrown stars and go win a championship? I mean, how do they get back to that spot?
I think from my standpoint, I think they need to be more consistent. It's like one year they do great, the next year they stink, and it's you're kind of on a roller coaster where before it seemed like they were building a team for the future. I mean, if you look at the Astros, they've been so consistent over the last few years. I think fans are looking for more of a consistent, you know, performance from one year to the next. And if they play well and they win, people will go to the ballpark and there'll be more interest on the radio. I don't think the fan base is what it used to be. I think it's more of a younger group that drink beer during the game. I think, you know, it used to be the old Red Sox fans were in the same seats in the park, you know, enjoying the game and waiting for that first World Series. But now it's a different crowd with different motivations to go to the game.
Do you find that the game is, even as a lifelong baseball fan, you know, in your late 50s, do you feel like the game is too long, too boring? I mean, or is that just like a young person's take, right? Like, is that just, you know, 20 something with a phone in their hand? I mean, how do you feel on that?
Well, I think my brain's probably wired different than a 20-year-old. I enjoy watching baseball. It's actually very relaxing. And it always used to move at a fairly decent pace. I think, you know, the last 10, 15 years, it definitely has slowed down to the point where it is kind of obnoxious, the amount of time that the pitchers hold the ball, you know, the batters getting in and out of the box. So they do definitely have to address that, because if they could make the game 2 hours and 40 minutes, that would be a lot better than 3.5, 4 hours, because people just don't have that time commitment to watch a game that takes 4 hours.
We got right up to the line on old man yells at cloud there, but you didn't cross it, which is number one, good news. Number two, very proud of you for staying on the normal person side. You talked about Bogarts. You know, we've talked to, I think, so many people in the organization, and they say over and over, we understand the importance of homegrown stars. You know, I think, growing up, your favorite player was Jim Rice. And, you know, you were growing up in the era of, you know, a lot of really good homegrown stars, many of whom played their entire careers here. We've seen that, you know, especially in the modern game, be rarely the case. I think, you know, if you want to regale the crowd with the story of me bawling my eyes out as a 7-8-year-old when they traded Nomar, you're more than welcome. Now I only cry if games go over 4.5 hours. And Chris Smith's not working, which is a discussion for another day. But, I mean, in terms of homegrown stars, do you feel like that has to be the identity of the organization again? I mean, do Red Sox fans, would they rather have, you know, all right, sure, maybe Carlos Correa is a better player right now. Maybe you go out and get him, but you got to get to know Carlos Correa, right? You know Xander Bogaerts. You know what he means. You know what he brings. You know he can bring it in this market. Is it better? Is it more important from a consistency standpoint for fans to have the guy they know, the guy they love, all that type of stuff?
I used to think that way, but I think more it has to do with whether the player, whether they're homegrown or a free agent, has the ability to play in this market.
Yeah.
I think Xander does. I think Devers does. JD Martinez definitely does. Mm-hmm. But there's been other free agents who have come in here and have been really good ball players other places, but just couldn't adapt to the environment and the attention of having, you know, not two reporters in the clubhouse, but
right.
10 reporters. And
it can be, when you have guys like Sean McAdam, Ian Brown down your throat every day, I mean, that gets to people quickly, right? That's the hard hitting questions.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that factors into it. I mean, you know, back in 75, when you had, you know, Rice, Lynn and Evans, you know, playing in the same outfield, you know, that was pretty cool that they all were brought up through the Red Sox system, but it was a different time and free agency was different then. So players don't want to stay with the same team, you know, their whole career as well, you know, because they can just make more money going somewhere else.
Right. I mean, this is a question that I hate to always ask it or think this way, because it's at the end of the day, it's the audience, right? It's the people that it's a group that, when I say Red Sox fans, I used to be a big part of, obviously, as a kid. It's different now. And we can outline the reason. I could do a 2-hour podcast episode on why. For you, obviously, it's a little different if you know the behind the scenes, right? But you still generally care, you know, about the team. Are Red Sox fans, like, in a weird way, entitled now? Like, 4 championships in the last 20 years, all of a sudden, like, it's the expectation is winning every year, instead of, you know, we're going to win once down the line. Have you, I mean, I know you're on Twitter, and that hellscape that is, do you see that shift at all? Because to me, it's interesting. Like, there's a lot of John Henry, Tom Werner hate out there, right? But they have won 4 titles since 2004. If you had told anybody previously between 04 and 18, you'd win 4 titles, I think people would take that in a second, and somehow, some way, it's not good enough. I know it sounds like a homer take, but sometimes it's worth taking a step back.
Yeah, I think, you know, for myself, once they won the first title, that relieved so much stress and anxiety, and, you know, watching them lose in 86 and then 75, they lost in 75 as well. So it was just building up. But once 2004 came, you know, that kind of took the monkey off my back. And then we won all the other championships. So if they do get in the playoffs, I'm definitely interested, and, you know, excited. My heart's not beating out of my chest like it did before we won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
But
who's we? You were on the team?
Well, no.
Yeah.
I should. The amount of time I've invested in the Red Sox, I should be on the team or on the payroll. But, yeah, so now if they get in the playoffs and they have a good showing, you know, I'm happy about it, but I'm not devastated if they do lose.
Let's completely switch topics, dig into, I think, what is the more interesting part of this, which is me. And, you know, I guess I have some questions that are deep, deep burning questions for you. Number one.
For your psychiatrist.
Yeah, well. Number one, why do you push me to keep playing baseball all those years when I clearly sucked and was always cut out to be behind a keyboard like the rest of the BBWA members who are completely incapable of playing any type of sport?
Well, I think you are a better baseball player than you give yourself.
Now, here we go. Here we go.
Yeah. I always thought you were a really good hitter.
Wrong. Objectively wrong.
You couldn't really throw very well. But,
no, or no.
But when you did connect, you had a lot of power. And, you know, you had
that, people at home.
A nice swing. Plus, you had a passion for the game. And when you did play, as much as you say you didn't enjoy it, you know.
No, I did.
When you did do well, you got excited and, you know, had a lot of fun. You know, didn't want to go and do drills and practice and that type of stuff. You wanted to just have all the accolades without doing all the hard work.
Right. But, well, I'm a kid who grew up in the 2000s. That's kind of the thing.
Yeah. But, you know,
I'm waiting on a this generation thing, but go ahead.
We're passionate about baseball and always knew you were going to do something in baseball. I knew you weren't going to play, you know, past, you know, freshman year in high school or college, but I always knew that, you know, you loved baseball. You loved the business of baseball. You know, you started keeping track of transactions on a spreadsheet when you were 6 years old and then started.
Yeah, people don't need to hear that.
And so I wanted to keep the fire burning so that eventually if you found some other niche in baseball, you'd have the same passion for it. And I think you have done that.
When we look back at my baseball career, and I feel like I have an easy answer here, but what is the most memorable moment, would you say?
Well, that's an easy one because there was one Babe Ruth game that you played. And
Fall ball,
I think it was. And the bases were loaded and you happened to be on third base. And one of our bigger sluggers came up and hit it over the fence. It was a grand slam. So everyone's running around the bases, you know, yelling, screaming, cheering, happy what happened. You know, everyone gets around home plate, they're jumping around. And then all of a sudden, the crowd dissipates. The umpire comes out and calls you out because
correct, right,
did not touch home base. So the grand slam was taken off the board.
There were two outs. I was so excited for our teammate, and we'll just name him Christian Miller. Still feel bad to this day, probably 10 years later. So excited for your first grand slam that I just missed home plate. The catcher, who is a narc, and I mean, you're 14 years old, man. Give it a rest at that point. Pointed at me, called me out, and the umpire agreed with them, and that was it. That was a very silent walk back to the dugout, and that was, I think, the moment I knew, like, maybe you go start tweeting about baseball. Maybe this is not cut out for you. Another one, maybe the finally make the All-Star team in middle school first practice. This is another absolute shining moment.
He was always on the bubble as far as making the All-Star teams, you know, from either Babe Ruth or whatever it was. So this one year, you know, after paying off the coaches or whatnot, I finally got him on the team.
Yeah, that's not true, folks.
But I usually played second base or infield somewhere, but for some reason he was shagging balls in right field, you know, during batting practice, which is always a mistake. If you've ever watched Chris, you know, run.
Which none of these people have. Well, actually, the media game, you know.
Maybe it's the media.
Yeah. Right. I did. There is. I do send out. But I mean, what you see now with the running is weighed down by the soft serve machine at Fenway. So we'll get your thoughts on that in a minute. That's fine. Keep
but anyways,
going.
So Chris was out in right field. Someone hit the ball. Keep in mind, this is his first opportunity to be on the All-Star game. He runs. He tries to do a diving catch. He breaks his wrist. And that was the end of his All-Star baseball career.
Yeah. It was fun while it lasted. Thank you. Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it's over.
Yeah.
Let's dig into that ice cream thing right now, because it's, you know, the fans on Twitter, they love the soft serve posts at Fenway.
Yeah.
And like, if you really break it down here, 365 days in a year, I cover about 60 home games. I'd say 95% of the time I get my Sunday. So let's say it's like 57, 58. Sundays over the course of time. I'll even give you 60. I mean, I don't eat sweets in the off season, right? Peak condition. But when you see it every day on Twitter, it looks like more than it is. If you really break it down, 60 days out of 360, 1/6, it's about once a week. So if you were to have ice cream once a week over the course of the year, I don't think it's that bad for you. But the responses I get over text from you on the soft serve, it makes it seem like it's more of a significant, severe problem. So I'll let you weigh in on that now.
Well, I think if you stretched 60 ice creams over a year,
that's what I'm doing. Yes, I am.
Your body would be able to metabolize that over time. You're eating 60.
Sorry, I didn't know you were a doctor of biology.
Well, I have a minor degree in medicine.
That's not true at all.
In your case, you're eating massive amounts of cholesterol in a short amount of period.
Okay.
So the reference to 365 may be your cholesterol count not those days.
It's once a week.
We're
That's
just really.
Out, you know? Yes. I mean, but there's no need. I'm thriving. Yeah. Next up. what is your favorite, since I know we're almost going on 10 years of me being on Twitter and tweeting things and having people respond and trolls and different people all over the country, all over the world get back to me. What is your favorite insult you've ever seen levied my way?
Well, first of all, we're coming up on what, 9 or 10 year anniversary of, you know, it was around Thanksgiving when you broke that first trade, Doug Fisher trade and the Ricky Nolasco free agent signing.
Right.
I remember that like it was yesterday. It was
the golden moments of every kid's childhood, breaking the Ricky Nolasco trade. You remember everybody remembers where they were. You know, first kiss, driver's license, when they broke the Ricky Nolasco trade.
Well, I just remember you came out and said, oh, I got this trade. Do you think I should put it on Twitter? And I said, you know, what do I know? I'm an accountant, but, you know,
right.
The world.
That could be the title of the whole pod today.
Yeah. So you put it on there and you were pacing back and forth. You went outside, walked around the house about 50 times.
Yeah.
Finally, Rosenthal or Heyman confirmed it. And that's how it all started.
Right. And now, 10 years later, you would have thought I would have progressed probably more career-wise than interviewing my dad on the day before Thanksgiving on a podcast. But, you know, to each their own.
Your original question, one of the best tweets someone tweeted at you just a few weeks ago, which was hilarious, was you got into some scrap about Devers.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, one of the best tweets that came back at you was, Chris, you smell like yesterday's tuna casserole.
That's right.
Which was funny because you actually do, but I
right.
don't know how a person would have known that.
It was your burner account, I guess. You're probably too old to know what a burner account is. My favorite one is very early on during the trade deadliner era, which I hate calling it that because no one knows what it means. But when I had that anonymous Twitter account talking about baseball news and rumors, and I was breaking stories while I was in high school, people were just convinced that it was just some in thanks to you. And, you know, so someone tweeted to me once, you're only getting these scoops because of your rich dad and his rich friends. And I read it and I was like, that's just not true. And then you put it as succinctly as possible and tweeted back to the person, I'm his dad and I'm poor and have no friends. So I think that, you know, clearly bucked that theory right now. But you know, if you do have a scoop for me at any time, ice cream or not, I'm willing to take it. Well, that is Dave Cotillo again, probably first and last ever appearance on the Fenway Rundown. I appreciate your time. And who knows, you got you might have a future in this podcasting thing. I think
once this gets out, I'm going to be on other outlets as well, you know?
Right.
Time.
Yeah, no, it is. And, you know, the accounting thing can be secondary, but we appreciate it. I love you and thanks for coming on.
All right. Thanks a lot, Chris. Proud of you.